Is everybody recording and, importantly, from the correct microphone?
Yes. Was that a problem last time?
Well, Sophie fixed it before we actually got anywhere.
The webcam, HD.
I'm just making fun of the HD webcam.
Levels!
Yes. Man, you can really just put HD on anything.
Okay, I'm ready. Let's get this bread. I sent it to you guys.
Let's get casting.
Sorry, I was drinking water when you started and it took a sec.
I've big pranked you.
I've been owned.
You say, shrinking away into a pamphlet.
I've been owned, I say, slowly shrinking and turning into a corn cob. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't say I get the reference, but that's what
It's a drill tweet. Here, I'll send it to you.
A drill tweet?
Famous Twitterer. Might as well just send the Know Your Meme page at this point.
I'm not sending the Know Your Meme page. That's cringe.
You're sending the ifunny.com.
That's right. .co.
I'm not owned. Continue to insist as I slowly shrink and transform into a corn cob. What does that even mean?
It doesn't mean anything at all.
Well,
it's drill. Okay.
All right. After that fascinating analysis.
Yes. Red Line Podcast, the best podcast in the West. Trademark. Okay.
That's presumptuous and probably wrong.
The best
but okay.
transit podcast in the West.
That's. We try.
Can you think of any other transit podcasts in the West?
I'm too busy listening to ours twice a week that I don't listen to anybody else's.
If you say Mountain West, I think that'd
be
true.
Are there transit podcasts West? In California? Or
there's got to be one in Seattle.
A gajillion million people live in California. There's got to be like dozens.
How many people did you just say live in California?
A gajillion million.
Oh, okay, because I thought you said like 80 million, and I was like, Kyle, you're off by exactly half.
If San Francisco would build housing, then maybe we could have 80 million Californians, but
Inshallah.
Alas, no.
Inshallah. Okay. Live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the internet, live from my bedroom and a number of other largely irrelevant places. This is the 100th episode of the Red Line Podcast. I'm your host, quote, podcast pro, unquote, Dunstan, and these are my co-hosts.
Kyle, quote, recording from a molehill inside a mountain, close quote, Holland, and...
Alex, quote, beaver dam censor, unquote, Fielder. Today for our centenary episode, we're discussing America's subway, the Washington Metro. Join us in learning about this masterpiece of 20th century urban planning after the news.
The name and the choice of topic makes it sound like we've been running a podcast for 100 years.
Centenary, yeah.
Hey, if Hello Internet can do a wax cylinder episode, why can't we?
I think that would be terrible, actually. We should do a vinyl episode, though. Vinyl pressing of... what do you think our best episode is?
That would be funny.
Of our Bard episodes.
What we'd do is we would make a vinyl exclusive.
Ooh, for the patrons.
Yeah, all of them that have vinyl equipment.
All of them that have Frontrunner tier. That would be expensive. Okay.
It's a vinyl pressing. Of course it's expensive.
Kyle, make the news noise.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Sorry, I don't mean to rush our flow, but we're short on time, and this is an 11-page episode. So...
I had forgotten the scroll.
Massimo Vignelli's ghost was vindicated yesterday as the New York Metropolitan Transit Authority adopted a new map extraordinarily similar to the one he designed all the way back in 1972. The new map will make the MTA's map primarily diagrammatic, but maintain familiar landmarks and colors. Altogether, it's a good-looking map, and maybe iconic enough that people will start getting tattoos of it. And I think...
That is a huge departure from the existing map.
Yeah, which is primarily geographic. This one is much more diagrammatic. So it's... I think this is a big improvement, actually.
I think it's great.
And it looks clean. So...
I can't comment until I try and use it. So...
you see, I'm never going to try and use it. I will... If I ever go to New York, which is never going to happen, I will... Because I've already been banned. I will
from the state of New York.
That's correct. For my various high crimes and misdemeanors. Funnily enough, I can still run for governor there, though.
Do you just not have to live in New York?
And no, but they let. But doing horrible crimes seems to be a qualification for that job. So.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
I was gonna ask if you were corrupt enough.
I don't know if I am. I mean, I have it on record that corruption is fine as long as it does things that I like. But
you got to go a few more steps.
I think I have to actually want to personally benefit from corruption if I want to be governor or mayor of New York. So
that's the real corruption.
Yeah. Like, I just want corruption that builds trains. And for clarification, if I ever run for office.
Well, if you're mayor, don't you have to do sexual assault too?
I'm sorry. No, that's if you're governor.
Oh, okay.
You just have to, like, brutalize people from, you know, non-white backgrounds if you're mayor.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I sometimes get the governors and the mayors mixed up.
Well,
and
given
what crimes which ones have done.
New York governor may actually be more or less powerful than the mayor of New York City sometimes. That's not impossible.
Understandable.
Was the governor ever in any Spider-Man movies?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I don't think he was in, or they were in Avengers either, so get owned. Okay, and then one more item. In local news, the new South Jordan downtown station has opened on the tracks Red Line, bringing us to, I believe, don't quote me on this, 57 stations on tracks. The newly...
I don't know if that's really true, and I'm not going to check.
I'm going to look it up. Hold on. UTA tracks.
Okay.
I think that brings us to 53. Okay, I was close. The new station will serve a new ballpark home to the Salt Lake Bees, rest in peace, ballpark neighborhood of Salt Lake City, and an accompanying entertainment district. I was there. It's fine.
I am once again amused that they are choosing to build this into the median of a new street instead of building it in its own corridor a few hundred feet to the side.
Or trenching it.
This is absolutely psychotic.
Or trenching it.
Or trenching it. Or trenching it, which
would
be ideal.
Trenching it.
But frankly, it might be cheap. It would probably be cheaper and obviously operationally much better to have it in a separate corridor.
Well, but you see, they couldn't have just left that corridor for the train and then built roads like, you know, a few hundred feet in either direction.
A couple hundred feet away.
And yeah. Built like a park or something, because that would have been horrible to have a train
and
not...
then not have like four-way intersections going over the train tracks, mm-hmm. and not have to do exclusive left turn signaling, and not be like forever prevented from using grade crossing gates, and not having like this super weird wide street with shit bike lanes. Like, there's a
it's
lot
not
of benefits.
That wide of a street. It's two lanes.
I'm thinking mostly in terms of, like, intersection ped crossings.
Oh,
as far
yeah.
as traffic speeds, they do all right, because it's divided.
That's true. I haven't looked at tracks ridership in a while. I wonder how it's doing.
But, like, so many benefits putting in a separate corridor.
Okay, and then last piece of news. For those of you who have been... This will go out 2 weeks from now. So for those of you who have been hiding in a hole... under a rock and only listen to this podcast as your exclusive source of news, which I recommend. I have just put here, Donald Trump destroyed the economy, lol. That happened today. So sorry to all of us who are graduating college this year. You're screwed. We're screwed.
Yep.
Okay. And now that that's over, Kyle, make the news noise.
Do-do-do-do-do.
Don't.
Okay, Positivity Corner, and quickly, what's one good thing that happened to you this week?
I don't know if I have anything.
I rode on a social bike ride past the ballpark, rest in peace the bees, and then I looked at the ballpark parking lot, and I thought, wow, the city's going to build something cool here, and then got on with my life.
I got to hang out with Redacted and also,
Commuter.
Friends. No, Redacted came here.
Wow. Reverse Commuter.
Yeah, I don't think that's how that works. Anyway, that's
been
the
positive. Call yourself an office the way you get commuted to.
That has been the Positivity Corner. So, the show, in the beginning, God created America and called it good because it is the best country in the world, and gave it the best possible capital city, Washington, D.C. And that was a lie. This is the Real Lies podcast. because actually it's kind of a swamp, both literally and metaphorically speaking, and has kind of terrible weather. So, hooray.
It's got a river, though.
It does have water. Water that, until very recently, was so dirty it would kill you if you swam in it. So...
And according to Hamilton, the location of the capital made a few people happy.
Well, Hamilton inspired Hitler, so we can safely ignore what he said.
I'm pretty sure Hamilton came after Hitler. It's not that old.
Not Kyle, not the musical, the guy.
I was talking about the musical the whole time.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes much more sense.
Welcome to 2025, where Hamilton the musical is more popular than Hamilton the man.
Hamilton, the founding father of the United States of America.
But man, the guy who plays Hamilton, pretty cool.
Yes. but despite its relative inhospitability, DC does have like 6.5 million people in its metro area, with something like 800,000 in the district proper.
Cold take, they should be able to vote.
I was going to say, that's like a... Like, you know in Dante's Inferno, where Satan is like in the very bottom of the... of hell and is just like frozen solid? Like, that is what that take is. That take is like frozen solid.
Cold.
Yeah.
It's that cold.
I'm glad that we got a classics reference into this episode. I think that would be important.
We got a Hamilton reference, both of them, and Dante's Inferno reference.
Yeah. Read the Divine Comedy, kids. It's interesting and relatively funny.
This is true. Way better than the OG.
Although one of my bosses at work was talking about reading it in the original Italian, and I was like, okay, wow, guess I'm a poser.
Everybody's a poser, according to the next person up.
That's true. I am a poser. Okay. Washington, D.C. It was founded way back in A.D. 1800 when Congress carved its territory out of Virginia and Maryland, and then just Maryland. Public transit began working almost immediately, with various omnibuses plying as early as 1801. And then, of course, those companies promptly folded and went out of business, leaving Washington without transit service until excellently named entrepreneur Gilbert Vanderwerken created a new omnibus service in 1830.
Vanderwerken.
I know. That's great,
love
isn't
that
it?
Name.
Is a good name. Man, the economies of the 1800s are very funny. Things move fast and crash faster.
Move fast and break things? Interesting.
Yeah.
I think that if something bad ever happens, you know, related to my family name, I will change my last name to Vanderwerken.
That sounds pretty funny.
So competition was hot, but by the mid-1850s, bus service was dominated by two companies. The Union Line, great name. And the Citizens Line, which merged at the beginning of the Civil War.
Names.
And then went on to operate until they ran out of service by the streetcars.
Exciting stuff.
I love to be on like the Democratic Party bus line.
I guess it's DC. They have a little fun.
Like they had newspapers back in the day that were called like, you know, the Arkansas Democrat or whatever. Why didn't we have like streetcar lines called like the woke streetcar line versus the conservative streetcar line?
Oh my goodness.
And
maybe we can bring that back.
I think that would be really great. I think actually we already have that, and it's just that we only have woke streetcar lines.
It's the red and blue line.
Well, statistically speaking, the blue line is more conservative than the red line.
Thanks, Daybreak.
Thanks, Daybreak. Yeah.
No, if we had a conservative streetcar line today, we'd have Rosa Parks all over again in like 2 seconds.
Oh well, we kind of already did.
Oh, I missed this.
It wasn't a race thing this time, though. It was a trans thing.
Wow, mixing it up.
This gap. I'm sure we'll have to have a race thing in the next couple years. I do not think that that's good. But
transphobia is in vogue right now.
It is,
maybe a bit more than racism.
And so this one gal in Florida informed the like state highway police at the Florida State Capitol that she was going to go use the women's restroom. And so they stationed like 10 cops outside the women's restroom. And she went in and washed her hands, and then they arrested her and sent her to jail.
What in the actual goddamn fuck?
And it was like very publicized because she was clearly doing it as like civil disobedience. But like, that is a little wild to think about, right?
A little bit, yeah. What's next? Mandatory genital and or birth certificate inspections on your way into the bathroom?
Oh, they wish. Either that or you get sent to RFK's health camp, but... where you drink colloidal silver and ivermectin until you pop.
A fate worse than death.
Truly. So, the first horse-drawn streetcar in Washington, D.C. began operations in July of 1862 and ran between the State Department and the Capitol building.
Base?
I love to just, like, get on the streetcar from the State Department to the Capitol building.
Base.
This original line is like the, you know, the Capitol subways that they have now that go to, like, the various office buildings?
Yeah, yeah. This was that.
This is the precursor to that in my mind. So
in your mind,
yeah, run by the Washington and Georgetown Railroad, the line was improved and enlarged to cover much of the fledgling district, interestingly and unsurprisingly being expanded to Georgetown.
It says that in the name. They were pretty on the nose back then.
It does. They were really much better at naming things than we are.
Georgetown is where on the map?
Georgetown
relative to like central DC.
Georgetown is to
That's Georgetown, Texas.
Georgetown is to the northwest of downtown. And when this was happening, Georgetown was still its own settlement within the District of Columbia. Now there's just Washington, D.C. Previously, there was also Georgetown, D.C.
Okay. So it's a bit of an event. We're breaking out of... former DC proper.
Yeah, this is like going to the suburbs. This is a commuter line. So
wow, back in the day when the suburbs were like 2 inches away from the capital of the United States.
Yeah, this is like a line to South Salt Lake, basically. So
it's actually shorter, I think.
It's probably to Sugar House in reality. So the Washington and Georgetown expanded quickly and was soon joined by a true plethora of competitors putting up rails all over the district. To list a few, there were the Metropolitan Railroad, the Columbia Railway, the Anacostia and Potomac River Railroad, the Capitol, North O Street, and South Washington Railway, and a plethora of omnibus and interurban services.
The sheer redundancy on this map is, like, almost impressive.
Okay, and you know why it was like this?
Fierce competition?
Congress used to have this thing called pork barrel spending, which was a way for Congress people to sort of give out things to people that they liked. I don't want to say this. This isn't really a pork barrel spending thing, but Congress directly controls the District of Columbia because it's a federal district. And so if congressmen liked somebody, they'd just give them a streetcar franchise in Washington, D.C.
That checks out. That checks out.
So it is kind of a corruption thing.
Well, not that New York wouldn't do the same thing, but...
Well, no, but, like, you know, it's funny.
It is a little bit funny.
And by the time that electrification was first undertaken in 1889, the companies had created a veritable web of streetcar lines across the district, as you can see from this lovely little map detailing all the different railroads and where they go.
That's pretty cool. That's very extensive.
It is. It gets very more veritable. Extensive.
It does.
There were the usual experiments with cable propulsion and, like, you know, steam propulsion. But by and large, Washington's streetcar network was all electric by the turn of the century, by which time horse-drawn cars...
It's not really, like, steep enough for streetcars.
Not in general. There's a couple places where cable cars would be useful, but not most of the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, you know, of course, that in, I think it was 1894, Congress. I love that Congress used to do things like this. Congress passed a law making horse-drawn cars illegal in D.C. And so a couple years later, it was all electric.
Parentheses mandatory, close parentheses.
Well, and even more interestingly, most electrification within the city of Washington, or within the district really, was actually done using underground conduit instead of overhead wires. City planners...
Oh God, that's a blast.
I know. There were 132 miles of conduit railway in Washington, D.C. at one point.
And this was before they made conduits that shut themselves off.
Uh-huh. So I love to just be a horse and accidentally step in a hole and die. But yeah, city planners and Congress were obsessed with the City Beautiful movement, and the overhead wires were considered to be an eyesore. So there were 132 miles of conduit railway in Washington, D.C.
Wow. Is this one of those places that is like super anti-overhead electric wire and like all the utilities are 100% buried?
Well, you know how bizarre Washington, D.C.'s building code is. So the answer to that question is, of course, yes. You will remember that no building in Washington, D.C. is allowed to be taller than, I think it's the Dome of the Capitol.
And so, I feel like Congress has just been making all this shit up on a whim.
Because they want it to be pretty and they have to preserve sight lines to the Washington Monument in the Capitol.
Texas moment.
See, it's like that excuse they had in Texas, but then they still actually want the transit.
Well, yes. They just sort of overcame the difficulties, and things used to be a lot cheaper to build. So, because the main cost was materials instead of labor. What a time to be alive.
Now we pay labor.
Now labor is actually valuable in the United States. Yeah, I think that's probably a good thing on the whole. But
probably. That's the understatement of the century.
We'll see what happens with regressive child labor laws.
I can't wait.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
The children yearn for the mines. Who's that idiotic governor, or excuse me, honorable governor of South Dakota? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
But she's evil. Or maybe it was Iowa. I don't know. They're both probably evil. So, you know, but I wrote here, the more things change, the more they stay the same. So following electrification, there was an even greater proliferation of streetcar services, including some that crossed the river to Arlington. And I have put here a list of the companies that I don't want you to have to look at. I don't want to have to read it out so the viewers can just read it.
It would be funny to read these as fast as possible, I will admit.
The Georgetown and Tenallytown Railway Company of the District of Columbia, 1888. The Washington and Great Falls Electric Railway Company, 1892. The Maryland and Washington Railway, 1892. The Capital Island Company, the Capital Railway Company, 1895. The Baltimore and Washington Transit Company, 1894. Name later changed to Washington and Maryland Railway Company in 1914. The Washington and Rockville Company, 1897. The East Washington Heights Traction Railroad Company, 1898. The Washington Traction and Electric Company, 1899. The Washington Spa Spring and Greta Railroad Company, 1905 in Maryland, D.C. in 1907.
They're really just running these left, right, and center.
Yeah, they were, I think, I don't know, I hesitate to say, like, make a quantitative claim like this, but I think that I would not be surprised, I should say, if the street railways of the District of Columbia were the most balkanized in America.
Back then.
We're going to talk about how that changed, but...
Like I say, balkanization was pretty popular back in the day, so...
Congress began to order consolidation starting in the 1900s, and by 1901, most companies were under the aegis of either the Capital Traction Company or the Washington Railway and Electric Company. Streetcars were beginning to face competition, though, in the form of bus lines of the Washington Rapid Transit Company, which was founded in 1912.
I was going to say, as always, I'm loving these names.
I know. Can we, like, return, please, to this? Like, I think that this is actually great.
What would we call the Utah Transit Authority?
The Provo Salt Lake and Ogden Railway. Actually, I think
buses.
We should balkanize.
And on demand.
No.
I don't think we should balkanize.
No, for the purposes of the meme, we should balkanize, right?
Oh, okay.
So Front Runner as a commuter rail is the Provo Salt Lake and Ogden Railway. We have the, like, Weber Rapid Transit Corporation, which runs buses in Weber, the like Davis Transportation and Light and Power Company, which runs transit in Davis. We have the Salt Lake.
And also the Intercounty buses. Somehow?
Yeah. The Salt Lake, Draper, and South Jordan Railway, which is tracks.
Are you naming this off of the ends of the lines or off the flipping map on your wall that tells you the important cities?
The end of line for both of those is in the correct place. We could also add a West Valley on there if we wanted, but the point is it would be funny if we did that.
It would be funny. West Valley would totally have their own. Murray would totally have their own.
Yeah. The Salt Lake and West Valley Railway. Yeah, that would be kind of funny.
Nah, the West Valley and South Salt Lake Railway.
That's so true. And they just sort of through run onto the Salt Lake, Draper, and South Jordan.
Why not? They've got the East-West line that used to be on Parley's.
And what is the Sugar House is what? The S line, I mean.
Oh, no. Sugar House is like a state level entity because Sugar House is about the size of like three planet Earths.
Well, I mean the S line, Kyle. What would we call it? Would it be like the...
Well, there would be no S line because the Parley's full east-west rail line exists. So it's truly a line that goes from all the way up all the way up Parley's Canyon, all the way out into West Valley.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, I have here for you a lovely map of the streetcars at their peak, which they hit in 1916. Over 200 miles of track and tens of millions of riders per year.
Good stuff.
Unlike many American cities, D.C. did not experience a rapid decline of streetcar services in the wake of the First World War. The city actually kept expanding its streetcars until 1934. There were even pushes by local newspapers and business people to put the streetcars underground and give the city a proper subway system. Although, alas, these were never meant to be. Although, they did get a singular underground turnaround loop in 1942 and a short subway on Connecticut Avenue completed in 1949.
Huh.
Which, the sort of length of which is pictured here. It was like...
Yeah, why do we think it... They ran so late, like the streetcar construction.
DC is an interesting city development-wise because its development, DC in like the early, like the beginning of the 20th century was a backwater. Like it was not that large of a city by American standards,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
Like, this so is it, the era of like Philadelphia, Chicago, New York, were like just enormous. So it grew up late, but it didn't grow up in the motor car era, if that makes sense. It sort of actually grew up early enough in the streetcar era.
And it had the backing of the United States Congress.
It did have the backing of the Congress of the United States, which makes it easy to get investment. But, you know, the sort of inevitable realities of urban geometry at that time still existed. And the buses, taxis, and motor cars of the new era were taking a toll. Washington's transit companies were forced to make some hard decisions. Notably, in 1933, the Washington Railway and Electric Company, the Capital Traction Company, and the Washington Rapid Transit Company came together to form the Capital Transit Company.
Consolidation, that is a bit of a marker.
A bit of a what?
A marker of being broke.
Oh, of troubles. Yes, it is.
Troubles to come. Capital Transit Company, that name does go a bit hard.
CTC, yeah.
Yeah.
Banger. The first PCCs would be introduced in 19...
PCC.
Huh?
PCC. PCC.
Yeah, the most famous American
average San Francisco tourist.
So true. Here's my hot take. Tear out the F market.
The Farket, more like.
That's it. That's the whole take. That's a joke, by the way.
You're so getting canceled over this.
That's a joke.
It better be or else.
Take the subway. The first PCCs were introduced...
Well, yeah, the FARC, it's decorative.
Okay.
That is not a joke.
Street space is not for decorative uses, but I digress. Although I do quite like the bits where it rolls over like the ventilation grates for BART. I think that's quite amusing. But streetcars were already coming to be seen as less economical than buses, and bustitution began as early as the late 1930s. Did I coin the term bustitution? I don't know. Maybe. I feel like we have this conversation every time I use the word. Okay.
What's it short for? We'll leave that as an exercise for the viewer.
Bus substitution.
Bus prostitution.
Okay, Kyle. So, Kyle.
Yes?
Is bus prostitution on a bus, or is it prostitution of a bus?
We don't live in the Cars universe, so probably the former.
Okay, but what about that guy that married his car?
We don't live in the Cars universe. That guy might. We don't.
I love to live in the Cars universe. So, like most American streetcar systems, the new Capital Transit Company saw a massive boost from the Second World War. DC's population boomed in wartime, and increased traffic meant new revenues for the company. By the end of the war, the CTC had $7 million in reserves and one of the country's largest systems. But then,
I'm assuming $7 million was like an unholy amount of money at the time.
It kind of was. Let's do an inflation calculator real quick. That's like $124 million that they had in reserve.
Okay, that's like not that much for a transit corporation. Never mind.
Kyle, but their operating operating costs were probably something like $2 million a year or something.
Right,
like,
right.
Because all their so people made like $2 a day. Yeah. So, yeah. that's a lot of money. Nobody anymore runs, like, reserves like that, ever. Because we do,
That's true.
Finance shenanigans now, so...
If we had reserves, we would spend it on debt service immediately.
Yes, we would, because nobody has... Imagine a company without debt. Doesn't exist, right?
Nope.
It used to. But then Congress got involved. This will become a theme in later episodes. And things got messy. Actually, it's already been a theme in this episode. They forced the owners of the company to sell to a rather corrupt group of brothers for pennies on the dollars, dooming the CTC to an ignominious death. There we go.
Suspicious.
The Wolfson brothers and other shareholders paid about $2 million to acquire control of the company. A company which has $7 million in reserves. So think about that and tell
that
me if the math adds up.
That does not add up.
Yeah.
That does not
add up.
Are
these predecessors to the Koch brothers?
I think they may be, as we will find out. So these guys, they paid themselves huge dividends while traffic decreased. So they're just paying themselves out of the reserves, basically.
Well, that's a very 2025 thing,
it
if
is.
I've ever heard of it.
It is. It really is. So they were really innovators for their time, I fear.
Unfortunate.
Streetcars... Oh, go on. Oh, that was it.
That was
okay.
All.
Well.
Real deep over here.
Streetcars continued to be removed sporadically over the next few years, even as DC became the first city with an all-PCC fleet in the 1950s. Even more trouble began in 1955 when Capital Transit asked for a fare hike from Congress. Yes, they had to ask the Congress of the United States of America, a government which by that time had several hundred nuclear weapons, to raise fares. Crazy. And then Congress denied them, which led to them denying their employees a pay raise, which understandably led to a 7-week strike that ground transit in Washington to a halt in the middle of the summer. That is 450 streetcars and 750 buses stood stock still for almost 2 months.
Holy.
And
they
this
didn't
is like a
fold at some point over a simple fare increase?
Well, and the real big problem is this is affecting congressmen.
Oh,
the worst
so
thing,
now it actually matters.
The worst thing that you can do. So
yeah.
The company's corrupt owner got in a spat with Congress about this. and Congress forced Wolfson to sell to a New York firm, who, for some reason, changed his name to DC Transit. As a part
not
of that...
not as cool as Capital Transit Company.
It is. As a part of that deal, Congress ordered the new company to switch to buses only by 1963.
Ugh, which so close.
Was both union busting and also they thought buses were more modern than streetcars. Strange times.
They sure thought that. You know, other countries have been continually developing streetcar vehicles and technologies, so they always maintain a lead. But I guess buses of 1963 were probably more modern than PCCs of whenever the fuck those were manufactured.
Well, they had, like, PCCs from the 1950s, so they have PCCs at this time that are, like, less than 10 years old. And...
oh.
And have, like, air...
You know, if it was 2025, they wouldn't be allowed to get rid of those.
Well, and they had, like, air conditioning and, like... yeah. So...
and the buses probably just choke you in diesel. So, yeah, they were probably better off with the PCCs.
Well, and they're conduits, so they're, like, electric underground for no reason. And so, I don't know. DCC, like, could have been the next San Francisco and then wasn't, sadly. The next San Francisco, meaning it preserved its streetcars, basically.
You give the streetcar network up once, it never comes back.
Well, I mean, they tried, but we'll get to that in a future episode.
Wow. Foreshadowing.
So, the last DC streetcar ran on January 28th, 1962, but there are remnants, like on this very charming street in Georgetown, where you can see the rail and the conduit.
Wow. They really did go all out with those cobbles back in the day.
They did, although I do think that some of these cobbles are not original.
I'm sure it's either replica or actually being maintained. Well, that's the thing about cobbles and pavers, is you do have to maintain them, or they suck.
So... DC's, the fall of DC streetcars, it's a very familiar story to all of us who are sort of transit people in the United States. But what happened next is not quite so familiar. It only happened a couple of other places. By the time that DC's streetcar and interurban system died, its replacement was already in the works, which is where we'll pick up next week with part two.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, because I'm used to the standard story of the streetcars died like pretty early. Like, DC's went until 1962. A lot of other places died pretty early. Which then, is like, you know, you start bustituting.
One of the latest to go. I think it... wasn't it St. Louis that's like that had its streetcars the longest? And it was like 66 or something?
It sounds about right.
Like, I feel like they're skipping over like the decades of like bankruptcy and decline that happened in like post-war, post-bustitution.
Well, right, because their system
before they eventually
was,
get scooped up by the government.
Like, never that financially troubled. Like, if Congress had given them a fare hike, they probably might have been okay. So. So yeah. Thoughts
then in
about
part two, we will cover the planning of the new system.
And then in part three, we will cover the present and future of Washington Metro.
Future. Wow. So
I love a three-parter.
A three-parter. Yeah, for our 100th episode. How does that make you feel that we have done 100 episodes of the Red Line podcast?
I was dividing that by the amount of weeks and 3 years, and those aren't the same number, but we're doing all right.
Yeah, we've done like 33 a year, and we're not quite to 3 years
yet.
No,
we're past 3 years.
we're over.
By like almost half a year.
Oh, well, maybe we're pretty bad then, but we did start off every week.
You know, we're not doing too bad.
No. Well, I, for one, am very pleased to have made it to this milestone with my good friends, Alex and Kyle, and to...
Oh, thank you, good friend.
And I think the funny thing is, we may pass, like, 1,000 subscribers about when this goes out, if we haven't already. Oh,
yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, currently we have 994, so...
You know, it's possible. Maybe that 100 will trigger the algorithm.
Maybe it will. Maybe it will. Like our, I don't know, our LA episodes did pretty well, I seem to recall, so.
Yeah, well, maybe by episode 110, it'll be all live again.
It's possible, because Alex is moving back here to lovely Salt Lake City, the city that always sleeps, the city that goes to bed at 9, because we have church.
The city that has a podcast.
The city that has a podcast.
The city that has more than 2 bars.
Ouch. Zing.
Yeah, that was a Logan diss.
Yeah, I could tell.
Freaking Logan.
We actually have 3, but one of them doesn't count.
You know what? So. I would be pro Logan if there was a train to there, but there is not, sadly.
They should build the tunnel. Hey, if y'all want to pitch in on doing the video about that.
The Logan base tunnel video?
I've got a pretty good husk of an outline, actually more fill than structure, and I've got a big old geology study to read through.
I mean, look, the very simple fact is...
But yeah, build the tunnel.
It's going to have to happen someday. Like, I've been thinking a lot lately in sort of the wake of this sort of disastrous moment we're in as a country at the moment about... what our future will look like and what our future needs to look like. And the simple reality is we're not going to be able to keep going on sort of burying our heads in the sand for too much longer about that whole climate change thing.
Climate conservation core.
I mean, seriously. With the amount of unemployment that the recession we're about to enter is going to create, that may actually be like a viable strategy for, you know, presuming there is a next administration.
I hope so.
The next administration, like, like, I don't know, man. Like, yeah, give me the Climate Conservation Corps, and they just like tear out freeways and build drains or whatever.
Give me the Green New
and
Deal
and build nuclear power plants. Yeah, like. Yeah.
Oh,
this may
God.
Be, like, I know it's cringe to say, and people are, like, always, like, sort of scared of saying it because it has gained a bad reputation for no good reason. But, like, even though it was, like, a 10-page document that's just, like, hey, we should, like, rebuild the country to not die from climate change. Ooh, scary. No, but we're gonna need, like, we actually need a Green New Deal now, because we're gonna need a new deal. Because we're going to have some kind of
economy problems.
And we're going to need climate change resilient infrastructure. And
when you put those vocabulary words together, you get
a new deal that is green or climate.
Wow.
Climate new deal. I don't know. So
I've never understood, because even if you don't believe in climate change.
Because...
It's just more about independence. Like,
my dad,
if you move away from fossil fuels, then you will have energy independence.
Okay, and here's the thing about this whole energy independence discourse. We already have it, guys. Like, the U.S. is the world's...
We're just exporting oil instead of using it.
We export a lot of oil. Like, the U.S. is the world's largest oil exporter.
We export a ton of liquefied natural gas,
yes,
too.
Yes, we do, because Putin...
Well, and we could, like, I guess we could technically drill all of Alaska and just ruin all of our natural places.
Well, but you see...
Or we could
save them. Alex, windmills are secretly the devil and are putting evil into your brain and have 5G in them and also COVID.
It's like that Landman, Billy Bob Thornton clip.
And unlike reliable natural gas, which has definitely not frozen up every winter for like the last 10 years and destroyed Texas's power grid, wind turbines are unreliable and do not work in cold climates.
And do not absolutely offset their emissions within 4 months.
And they also kill birds and stuff. And so they're worse than the thing which is killing the entire planet because... of these sort of minor and solvable setbacks, and also a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't exist. Do you see? Do you see now?
If you're worried about birds... Oh, no, I get it now. Let's not worry about cats. Let's worry about wind turbines when it comes to birds.
Okay, now that's an underrated, like, ecological disaster, is the American house cat. Oh.
Yep.
But anyway.
I've got my American house cat right next to me.
Is it an inside cat?
Aww. Oh, yeah.
Okay, then you're fine.
It won't get eaten by a wind turbine.
That doesn't mean I like it. But... No, it's fine. I just don't like it too much.
But yeah, we're gonna need a Green New Deal, and it needs to be like good. And that's my opinion. And also, look, we have to remember as we do this that regulation is not good in and of itself. It's good for what it does. And so
yeah,
things that are limiting our ability to create climate infrastructure need to go, and quickly. And climate infrastructure, by the way, includes housing, including market rate housing. So
that is extremely true.
Think about that for...
Like, run the numbers on, like, the water, energy, air efficiency of dense housing versus sparse housing.
Well, and also, like, if we can't... Building transit infrastructure is really expensive in this country right now, and that might change, but if it doesn't, then a way that we can really maximize the stuff that we already have and maximize the stuff that we build is by putting as many people within range of it as possible. So.
Well, there's too many problems.
It's fine.
I was just watching a good Joint Transit Association video that actually does that analysis for New York City.
Ooh, exciting.
Like, on what subway lines is there just excess capacity on, like, the ends of the lines where we could just strategically densify to grow housing and the subway in tandem and in perfect balance.
Well, doesn't the whole subway have excess capacity right now because it's still carrying like 2 million less people than its peak? Okay. And I don't see what the problem is.
Some spots have a lot more excess capacity than others.
Have you guys seen like the crazy stuff that congestion pricing is doing in New York right now?
I've seen a lot of the coverage. Like, apparently traffic is just gone.
Yeah, it actually just solved traffic. And also, like...
This is, like, kind of funny.
It just, like, immediately, like, traffic solved. And also, like, visits to downtown New York are, like, up by, like, an appreciable percentage. Subway ridership, NJT ridership, Long Island Railroad ridership, Metro North ridership... also up by like an appreciable percentage. Path ridership, all this stuff. That's, just like,
yeah.
And it wasn't like a slow climb like people thought it was going to be. It was like
just click,
and then it kept climbing. Like it's crazy how one good policy thing can literally solve so many problems. Like, come on, guys.
Pricing driving, crazy concept.
We can do this in more places, I think.
A lot more places. And I think congestion pricing only makes sense in like a select few places, but the broader strategy of pricing driving for what it costs and what it's worth is applicable in many ways in many places. Like, Salt Lake could charge for parking.
Period.
Hate to break it to you, but $2.25 an hour is not charging for parking in this economy.
I mean, frankly, we can't charge for parking, though.
Because yes, we can.
No, there's so much, like... There's so much excess parking in downtown that there's, like, no scarcity. So how do you, like...
I mean, specifically street parking. We already charge pretty fairly for off-street parking.
Yeah, we should charge more for street parking, I'm sorry to say.
The street parking is comically overful, and we have got so many double parking
but
problems.
But you know that if we did that, then the suburbanites would lose their minds, and then the legislature...
And then the state would pass a law stopping us from doing specifically that.
Well, or they would pass a law stopping us from charging for parking at all. Like, free parking is a human right. Like, like, you know, you better not, like, you know, want to not be discriminated against at your job, or, like, have reproductive health care, or, like, you know, any of that sort of thing. Like, that's not a human right. But you know what is? Free parking.
Free parking. Because cars are humans.
Cars are more important than humans, actually.
We're better at housing than we are at housing humans.
That's unfortunately true.
You're
going
to bring back my old idea where we turn an abandoned parking garage into, like, a place where people can live.
How about an operating parking garage that's, like, up to code?
Well, you know what I mean, though. There's a lot of operating parking garages in Salt Lake that just have no one
that are horribly underutilized.
Yeah. So,
well, and frankly, you got the 10-story ones. Why not, like, steal the top couple of floors that nobody wants to drive to?
Sure, let's do
good
it.
Good views.
Box it in with like fiberglass or whatever, or sheet Kong, or what's it?
Dude,
sheetrock.
If New York can turn any building ever built into studio apartments, why can't we do it with a parking garage?
I'm turning my parking garage into studio apartments, yeah. So anyway, this has been the Red Line Podcast. Thank you for listening. Oh, wait, we have to do the whole thing. Okay, Kyle, get the patrons ready.
Working.
Please remember to like, comment, and subscribe, and to follow us and leave us a rating on iTunes and/or Spotify. If you like what we do here, please consider becoming a member on Patreon. Patrons receive early access to regular episodes, as well as exclusive content and occasional merch drops. Speaking of patrons, at Front Runner tier, $10 or more per month, we have Zach Adams, Aaron, Curtis Herring, Devin Zander, Phobos2390, and Tony Stunts.
At $5 a month, our headline tier, we have Christopher Whaley, DJ.
Hi, Will.
Hi, Will.
Watkins. Elisha Kinsler, Isaac Madsen, Jesse Mayo, Nebula, reluctant LA resident, Robert P. Walsh, and Zephyr Zamora.
At the DC Metro line that appears blue on the map coloring tier, $3 a month, we have Alex Dykelski, Alice MYOB, Ben, Ethan McDonald, Evelyn, G4, Jack McCoskey, Litmus Zest, Martin Hecker Martinez, Matt Gray, McKay Ransom, Oliver, Sam Myers, Sky Lukowski, Toronto Transit Channel, and Zach Verstott.
And at our green line tier, $1 per month, we have Benjamin Wood, Joshua S. Horvath, Kapil, Ryan Bailey, and William Rowe. Thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Go ride a metro.
Yeah, go ride a train.
And by that I mean any system whose official name is Metro.
Okay.
Or contains the word Metro.
Or may have been called Metro if things went differently, like tracks.
The Salt Lake City Metro.
Yeah. That was a contending name, as we know.
It has one subway portion under the I-215.
That is not a subway portion. That is not a subway portion. That is just an underpass.
Yes, it is.
You are actually coping.
That one goes in like an actual concrete box tunnel. Most of the underpasses are like bridge sections of a freeway. This one's a tunnel. Yes, I am coping.
You are, and that goes under Front Runner, doesn't it? And not. I'm fairly certain that goes under Front Runner, but I'm not sure.
Fairly certain. Yeah, that makes sense that part's under.
We should put a transfer-only station right there. How do you guys feel about that?
That's the stupidest idea known to humankind. yeah, the box tunnel's on a Front Runner in UP. Never mind, they just have regular underpasses for the freeway.
Wicked.
You do realize we have a transfer station for the same line, one station up the line. This is not E-BART.
Boo. Boo. Hater.
I wish it was E-BART.
Man, I wish we had BART.
If we're not careful, we're going to get Salt Lake City E-BART.
We are getting Salt Lake City E-BART.
Right, which is why we're ordering the trains that have a diesel pack option.
Better than a battery pack option.
That is true.
That is true.
I'm just going to say it.
Oh, single track Salt Lake City E-BART. I'm moving to a real state. I swear.